open it to Habakkuk chapter 1. I want to look at some verses with you, and then I got a question for you after this is all said and done. But I want you to look at these verses that, and I want to kind of encourage you as we keep working through this study that, I don't know about you, but God's really been working on me on some different things. And something I'm finding, and I know this may sound real elementary, but I'll just say it. I think the Bible is written for hurting people. And until you feel certain amounts of pain in different areas, it becomes really academic. And what I'm finding is when you're going through a difficult time and you go to the Word, it speaks to you in a way that it wouldn't at other times. Like when you open it up, I've had devotions lately. I've got this one-year Bible app that I'll literally start the reading and it'll go, today's reading's in Jeremiah. And it's talking about the idols in our life and how we don't give everything up and we backslide. And also, I'm just sitting there going, wow. And then talking about things that God wants to work in a church about and things along that line in the Second Thessalonians. And I'm just listening to this and I'm going, wow, Father, thank you for times where it's as C.S. Lewis says, pain is God's megaphone. And so to be able to hear that and receive that. And so Habakkuk is frustrated. He tells them, remember how this has been going. He goes to God because he's frustrated with his people, Judah, who have been sinning. And he's going, you got to do something about this. And God goes, I got this. But the people he's going to use are worse than the people in Judah. And so this army that he's talking about is fierce when we get to the 8th verse here. And they got horses and soldiers that are larger than life. And I don't know if you've ever seen like professional athletes. Like the other day I was looking at, just watching on TV, I can tell this guy's big. Because he's standing next to all the other players, the Cardinal right fielder. Hayward. Yeah, Jason Hayward. He is a beast. And so I could imagine, I'm thinking I'm pretty good at softball. I could imagine if he just stepped on the field, how instantly I would feel. And that's what I think it is. I would be very Judah. He'd be very Babylonian. And it seems like they can appear out of nowhere. They can wreak havoc and then disappear. They were that kind of army. That's the reputation they had. They resembled, in fact, he uses words here where they resemble wild beasts of prey with this desire to attack. And so who could stand before an army like this? Look at verse 8. He goes, their horses aren't just swifter than other horses. Their horses are swifter than leopards, more fierce than the evening wolves. Their horsemen press proudly on. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle, swift to devour. And so he first describes these horses, and he describes them so quickly and fascinating and fierce. And something you and I have to remember is there was hill country in Judah, and so horses and chariots weren't like predominant in their warfare. That was very Egyptian. That was very Babylonian because they would have the flat plains where they would do stuff. And so they developed warfare that was based on how the terrain of their land was, but Babylon had this reputation. So they're terrified. It's like a certain team that's going to show up to your town and they win all the time. And that's what these are like. And then he says, you see this, he talks about they're more fierce than the evening wolves. Evening wolves were hunting wolves, they were feeding, they were hungry, and they're ready to run. Verse 9. They all come for violence, all their faces forward. They gather captives like sand. And so their purpose is clear. They're bent just on violence. They're going to sweep into Judah. They're going to plunder and destroy. They are determined to take Jerusalem, and they will do whatever they want to do. Verse 10. At kings they scoff, and at rulers they laugh. They laugh at every fortress, for they pile up earth and take it. And so they have no fear because they don't They have no, those are the kind of people you would need to fear, is people that have no fear. Like I have, I don't know, Kim and I, when we were first dating, when I first getting to know this girl, I mean, in a way that we're dating, because we knew each other pretty much all of our lives growing up in church together. And so, and I was, one of the, my best friends lived down the street from her house. And so I'd go and visit at her house, but she's 6 years younger than me, so she was like this little girl. Well, then I grow up, and then, oh yeah, she grew up too, okay? And so it became legal that I could actually date her, okay? Rob Dern quit looking at me like that. And so anyways, we start dating, and there's this, up in Chicago, there's these convenience stores like Open Pantry. I don't know if they ever had them down in St. Louis, but they had these on pretty much, it seemed like, every corner or just in certain areas of the city. And one time, we're driving by, and this guy is screaming. He's outside in the parking lot, and he's screaming at Montrose Avenue. He's just screaming and stuff like that. And I'm looking at him like he's weird, and I go, look at that guy. She goes, ah, that's psycho. Hold on. She, or some, they named him. He was the neighborhood nut, okay? And so there were, you remember that moment when I was just like, how do you know this guy, you know? And so I was like, wow, this girl's pretty cool. But as we're, there were times where we would walk down there, and I remember even when your, I don't know if you remember, knew this, but your mom, your grandfather had died, and she wanted papers for the obituary in the Chicago Tribune. And I walk down there, and he's in the store, and he just stared at you. I thought he was possessed sometimes. He just was a nut. Yeah, he was just a nut. And he would scream, but every now and then he was calm. But my point on that is, if you meet somebody that has no fear, you need to fear that person, okay? There are people that when I was a little kid watching in the neighborhoods, or there would be a guy that was drunk, and I just remember my dad pulling me off to the side, because it's like, if somebody doesn't have any fear, those are the people you need to fear, because they got nothing to lose. They got nothing to lose. And that's Babylon. They are drunk with violence and killing, and they could care less. Verse 11, then they sweep by like the wind and go on, guilty men whose own might is their God. And so though they're ordained by God, actually, to carry out his purpose, but they only worshiped might and strength. That's what they appreciated. They would bow to no man and listen to no gods, and they did not care about anyone else. And so when I think about this